Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary of Defense, Mr. Secretary of the Navy, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Moore, Admiral Holloway, my distinguished four-star confreres from around the fleet and from Washington of the Navy and the Marine Corps team, my friends from the Congress and from foreign navies, men and women of the United States Navy, and their guests. Frequently in the last 4 years, Musa has asked me who I thought would follow us into the house where we live. And on every occasion, I have assured her that she didn't have to worry. It would be someone of distinguished naval background with a wonderful family, a great professional, with a great record, and I could assure her that he would be right there on the stage with me. And Mr. Vice President, thanks to your graciousness in being here today, and I would like to report in this highly parochial audience that the Vice President accorded me the honor of standing aside and letting me dissent from that decision until the Congress had spoken, and kept himself aloof from the struggle until the decision was made, the very proper decision that the Vice President of the United States must have a secure home provided for him. As one looks at those who are here on the stage with me and in the audience, it almost symbolizes the conflicting loyalties which the Chief of Naval Operations must have. He is, by law, the naval advisor to the President of the United States, whose representative is here today. He has a special set of responsibilities as a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs and to the Secretary of Defense. And he has a different set of responsibilities to the Secretary of the Navy, and a still different set of responsibilities to those in his organization. And it's a source of great pride to me that although it is never possible to take a stand which is acceptable to all of those masters, all of them understood the need for me to make the decisions at my level as I saw them. 4 years ago, I accepted here from Admiral Tom Moore command of the United States Navy. And today, I have the honor of passing on that command to one of my own Naval Academy classmates, Admiral Jim Holloway, with whom I began my active naval career 32 short and exciting years ago, as we were sworn in the rotunda right behind me, and as I live just 50 yards away. I have often said that I have always approached each assignment as if it were my last. These past 4 years were no exception, other than the fact that this is indeed my last assignment. In 36 hours from now, I shall end my naval career. When one reaches this point in his life, it has been traditional on some occasions to spend some time and no small effort in reviewing the record as he perceives it. The successes, naturally enough, are modestly ascribed across the entire spectrum of humble clichés to the works of others. Those occasional non-successes, naturally enough, are attributed to forces far beyond the individual's control, thereby neatly to be cataloged and forgotten. Since I have not been notable for the traditional approach to things, I shall not take up my allotted time today by reciting for you what I think has or has not been accomplished during my 4-year command of our Navy. Nor shall I attempt to impart any great truths acquired during my 32 years of active service, except to say that each day has indeed been a new challenge and learning experience, and I still have one more day for both before I retire. I shall leave it to the historians, therefore, to judge the past. What I prefer to do instead is to draw your attention to the performance of our individual Navy men and women, who in times of peril during the past 4 years rose to the occasion, giving selflessly of themselves, performing the impossible, and then coming back for more. In the wake of the final spasm of invasion of South Vietnam 2 years ago, our Navy, drawing from both the Atlantic and Pacific fleets, tripled the number of carriers and doubled the number of other surface combatants and supporting ships on the line in the South China Sea to help stem and throw back the tide of that invasion. They carried out flawlessly the aerial mining of Haiphong and other North Vietnamese harbors, helping to bring our fighting there to an end. And then, when the fighting was over, they went in and swept the harbors they had mined only a short time before. In the Middle East, in 1970, and again in 1973, they were there when fighting broke out, prepared once again, if required, to defend our interests and protect our countrymen. Most recently, they participated in the clearing of the Suez Canal, just as they had done a short time before on the other side of the world. In the War of the Indian Subcontinent in 1972 and again in the Yom Kippur War, they deployed into the Indian Ocean over vast distances and maintained themselves ready to support U.S. policy. This was accomplished by superb officers and superb petty officers while meeting two additional dramatic challenges imposed upon them: the changes required to achieve an all-volunteer Navy and adapting to providing true equal opportunity. It has, therefore, been a privilege to have observed their performance and an honor to have served with them. When I assumed command of our forces 4 years ago, I said that our individual Navy men and women were my source of strength. I can report to you, Admiral Holloway, that their strength has never failed, and I trust will grow even greater during your watch. I do not, however, intend to let this moment pass without some observations about the future. First, I am proud today to commend to the men and women of our Navy the proven leadership of their new Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral James L. Holloway III. I have known and admired him since our days at the Naval Academy, and most recently as my Vice Chief of Naval Operations, a position for which I personally selected him on the basis of his distinguished performance in a host of challenging assignments, both afloat and ashore, in which he has proven himself ready to accept any challenge as Chief of Naval Operations. I am also especially delighted that his father and my former commander, Admiral James L. Holloway, Jr., is with us today to see his son assume command, even as my father was able to be with me 4 years ago on a similar occasion. I promised earlier that I would not dwell on the past, and I do not intend to do so. In order to make a point about the future, however, I do feel I must briefly refer to the days of wooden ships and iron men. There is, at the bottom of this hemisphere, a place where seafaring men have feared since sailors first passed that way 4.5 centuries ago to travel. Few more fearsome bodies of water exist on the earth. It is here that the Atlantic meets the Pacific in a maelstrom of foul winds and vicious seas that have tested the courage and skill of mariners to the fullest. And yet, man, if he were to push his barriers outward and circumnavigate the globe, had to go that way, as Magellan did. I believe that we have, during the past 10 years, been in the process of passing through similar perilous waters. For it has been during this time that we have found ourselves engaged in the longest and most unpopular war in our nation's history. One that saw our Navy taxed, both in men and equipment, to the absolute limit. During this time, we have seen our once great fleet cut almost in half, and our remaining ships and personnel forced to endure long and continuous deployments as their numbers dwindled while requirements increased, and as our nation turned away from international imperatives to attend to the vexing problems closer at home. During this time, we also saw the world's greatest land power, which has no fundamental need to control and use the seas, develop a capability to do so, which nearly in every way challenges our own. Just as seafaring men have paid heavily for every league traveled in unavoidably heavy seas, so have we paid a price, and the journey is not yet complete. In navigating these treacherous waters, we have often been forced to tack or trim our sails, and I do not believe that we have yet reached clear sailing, although fair weather may beckon ahead. We are, at this moment, engaged in momentous efforts to determine whether or not two powerful nations, each of a different philosophy of man's destiny, and each with the ability to consume the other by an Armageddon of nuclear fire, can rationally and successfully negotiate a mutual balance of strategic power. Our Navy is very much involved, providing one leg of the strategic nuclear triad, the sea-based leading edge of America's defense. In the non-strategic field, because of drastic reductions in naval forces and personnel, our Navy has reached a point where the odds are it can no longer guarantee the free use of ocean lifelines to the United States and allied forces in the face of a new, powerful, and still growing Soviet fleet capability. And yet, despite the turbulent past and difficult times ahead, I believe we can persevere and that we will. I believe that, just as Magellan found and successfully navigated the previously uncharted strait which bears his name, so can this great maritime nation pass through the storms of change, round the Cape of Reconstruction, and come up the other side with strength and confidence into calmer seas. The consequences of conceding the world ocean to others are simply too serious to be allowed to continue. Our countrymen have never before turned away from their responsibilities, nor do I expect them to do so now. It is for that reason, my faith and trust in our nation's people and their ultimate wisdom, that I believe it will be on Admiral Holloway's watch, supported by his Secretary of the Navy and his Secretary of Defense, that we indeed will round the horn. His capable and steady hand will set us steaming on a heading toward regaining the undisputed supremacy at sea, which our national survival demands and which we have surrendered temporarily. There are still rocks and shoals ahead. There are still men of goodwill and conscience who must be persuaded of the seriousness of our Navy's need for their support. We must do more for the good of our Navy men and women and their families. They are, always have been, and always will be, our greatest asset. But even the best people cannot carry the good fight unless we provide them the ships and aircraft to deter aggression, or if we must, to repel it. Finally, today marks the changing of the watch, the change of our Navy's top command. And there can be only one officer in command of a ship, of a fleet, of a navy. Admiral Holloway, the watch is yours. I pass on to you the absolute authority and responsibility of this command. I leave to you, our Navy, with confidence that it will serve under you, as it has under me, loyally, courageously, and with the dedication that has been the keystone for the past two centuries. Good luck and Godspeed. I will now read my orders. Bupur's order, 08-8395, Admiral Elmore Zumwalt, Jr., USN, CNO, via the Secretary of the Navy. When relieved on 30 June, detached duty as CNO, proceed to your home of selection. You will regard yourself relieved of all active duty effective at 2400 on date of detachment. Your request to be transferred to the retired list was approved by the Secretary of the Navy effective 1 July 1974.